Over $60 billion venture capital dollars poured into fintech in the last 5 years. Close to $1 trillion was invested by incumbents in that same time frame. Infographics show financial services has been unbundled, disrupted, and disintermediated. At the same time, other headlines scream the fintech bubble has burst and we're returning to reality. Disruption is real. Disruption is hard. FinTech 5 breaks through the signal to noise with 5 questions answered by the revolutionaries changing the world. Hear their stories, understand their why, share in the triumph of change and the agony of inertia. This is the FinTech 5.
Welcome to the FinTech 5. This is your host, Jason Henricks. We're relaunching and trying out new formats and have been for a while. Based on your feedback, we're moving to a Friday release and we're going to focus on the 5 things you should know or be thinking about. Still roughly 5 minutes of listening, but hopefully a lot more time reflecting. So today, as the world wrestles with the global pandemic of the novel coronavirus 19, the debate rages whether we are over or underreacting. My partner Brett wrote a great piece on the interplay of coronavirus and fintech technologically, especially around China, and you can read it at bit.ly/fintech5corona. Corona spelled like the beer, if you didn't know that, unfortunately for them. So bit.ly/fintech5corona, and go read it there. What I want to focus on instead is, so as a result, the U.S. Federal Reserve cut rates to 100 to 125 basis points. So not as low as 2008, but notably, this is the first emergency cut since then. So how do rate cuts impact banking and fintech? Well, for one, if you're an incumbent, you understand this, that bank profitability goes under pressure. Banks live and die by net interest margin, which, I'm going to oversimplify here, is roughly the difference between the rate you can get for lending your money and what it costs you to gather the deposits, the money you're using to fund it. Now, the lending rate is closely tied to the Federal Reserve rate. So if that rate goes down, the amount that a bank can charge for a loan also goes down. And unfortunately, the cost of gathering deposits, if it doesn't drop as well, the net interest margin is under pressure. And banks typically get deposits in one of two ways. They pay interest on the account, which is a pretty clear cost and a pretty expensive one, or they have a core checking account, whether it's commercial or consumer. And while they don't pay interest on those accounts, there's certainly costs associated with it, having it on your core, the transactions coming in and out, you know, there's a cost. And so there's only so much you can actually drop your costs associated with deposits. Well, this is where the fintech partnerships come in, where the bank acts as the bank of record so that the accounts are regulated and FDIC insured, and then the bank can turn around and use those as a source of funds. Now, this is something we had helped pioneer at Perk Street back in 2008, and I want to give credit. You know, we stood on the shoulders of the folks at Smarty Pig and Hire One specifically to really help explore and build this model. If you think about this business model, the challenger bank really has, you know, 3 ways that they can make money. The first is on the revenue share of interchange, the transaction fees that are coming in. The other is the bank typically pays them a percentage of the balances that they're able to lend out. And guess what? Those balances and that rate that you are getting paid is typically tied to the federal funds rate. And so when that rate nominally heads towards zero, the revenue the startup gets from the balances also begins to approach zero. You don't have to be a math genius to know that. The closer you get to zero, doesn't matter how big your percentage of it is getting to be closer to zero. And I only laugh because we lived this pain from 2008 to 2013. And so if we break down those 3 sources of revenue, which is 1, share of federal funds on the acquired deposits, approaching zero, share of interchange, and fees. You know, here's the challenge. Most neobanks tout no fees or are still proving out their ability to upsell into a paid subscription account like Monzo Premium or N26 Metal. So if revenue from balances is effectively zero, subscription is at best unproven or to be seen how significant it is in terms of the uptake we'll see from that, we're only left with interchange. Now, this can be an entirely different episode. In fact, it will be soon on the idea of, you know, should interchange exist? Because the entire premise has been under pressure from a long time from merchants. And I would posit the only reason it still exists in the way it does in the U.S. is the installed base and the ability for banks to kind of prop that up. Guess what? In the rest of the world, interchange does not really look like the U.S. as such a high percentage, and that friction that adds to commerce. And I think that is likely to change, both because of the pressure from the rest of the world, but technologically. But let's just put that aside for now. Here's the five things you should be thinking about this weekend. First, is the traditional banking business model of spread, the difference between the amount you can bring in from lending and the cost of funds, going away? Two, how do bank business models and the practices around how they make money need to evolve? Three, is it a when, not if question, that interchange either goes away entirely or goes down significantly? Four, what will the revenue model be for neobanks in a zero or low interchange world? And five, do we need to fundamentally rethink how financial services and products are paid for, either explicitly in terms of someone knowing that they're paying a fee or implicitly, which is often the case today? Hey, this has been the FinTech Five. Hopefully this gives you a lot to think about. If it does, please send us some feedback or continue the conversation on Twitter @FinTech5 or @JasonHenricks.